never knew it would have come down to this. I see my land going down like the great Titanic. Mayhem and confusion and panic in the middle of the Atlantic. Well, I wonder, should I jump off the ship or go down with the captain like we patriotic? The answer, somebody better think quick. The situation getting drastic. Yeah, captain, should we up off the trip? The sea is getting rough, but should we jump off the ship? And I say, captain, tell me if you lose grip. It's like we out to sink, but should we jump? Should we jump? Captain, there is no time to waste. Cause if the ship sink, too much lives at stake. Captain, I'm on now, gonna wait, I'm gonna chuck off before it's too late. Why? When I say captain, does know what I mean.
Allow me to introduce myself. My name is Eej. V to the IJ. Since Jake is gone, y'all gon' do it my way. I'll save the world, Gandhi, Che, and Poxway. Then chill with Mott Brown, Beyonce, Beach. Not VJ Sin, but got the year-round tan, and you love the brown skin. My brown sweater's got a scarlet letter, but as I grow up, my sweater starts to fit me better. So watch what I'ma do, break you off something new, but respect the message Flash dropped in 82. See me shine as I secure my spot, I'm starting to get hot. See, my brain's Machiavelli branded. Pen in my hand and fiending for a grand and fiending for my land. I'm pocking up the streets, riding beats till I burn. Then my soldiers pray 5 times a day towards my urn. And I walk tall and carry a big stick. My balls are so big, when I jog I trip. I spit proud, scream my name out loud. My balls are so big, the three of us are a crowd. Yeah, I walk tall and carry a big stick. My balls are so big, when I jog I trip. I spit proud, scream my name out loud. My balls are so big, the three of us are a crowd. Yeah!
Tears over years, I have a fear. If I'm alive, I'll see you back here. But even on a nice day, somewhere the sky's still gray, I'll learn the game. And now it's time to play. Cause y'all know I gotta go my way. Y'all know I gotta go my way. Y'all know I gotta go my way. Cause I wanna play chill. Y'all know I gotta go my way. Y'all know I gotta go my way. Y'all know I gotta go my way. Cause I wanna play Chain. How can I say I wanna play Chain when Jay got killed by the CIA, like John Lennon, Hawk, and MLK? I'm telling Mom I should've got my MBA. But day-to-day dreaming, eyes gleaming, got me thinking for a reason to be pleasing. People asking for a reason for next winter season. When you're looking for where to go, catch me smoking cigars and Kevlar vests with Castro. Cause y'all know I gotta go my way. Y'all know I gotta go my way. Y'all know I gotta go my way. Cause I wanna play chain. Y'all know I gotta go my way. Y'all know I gotta go my way. Y'all know I gotta go my way. Cause I wanna play chain.
And good morning, CKLN listeners. It is the fourth day of April 2011. You are listening to CKLN's Rude Awakening here on CKLN 88.1 FM, CKLN.FM online, and Rogers Cable Box 947. This is your host, BK, a.k.a. VJ, on Mondays and Thursdays. And you are listening to CKLN's Rude Awakening. And you were just listening to CKLN's First Ladies of Reggae and Soul here. It's Al Roots Reggae, now doing the afternoon drive slot, but generously offering their time to fill in at their previous slot from 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. on Monday mornings. And so hopefully you folks enjoyed that and their nice, chilled out, relaxed vibes on a crappy, cold, rainy Canadian morning here in the T-Dot in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, broadcasting from Ryerson University. And I got to tell you something. I do constantly go off on the power of music to get us in the mood to handle our business here. And what is our business currently? Our business currently is the elections happening right now. The Canadian federal elections. Been about a week into the 5-week Fed election, Jack. What looks to me like a real simple scheme to jack us with a 5-week election that happens too fast for us to think about it, where half of us are way too apathetic and the other half of us are way too into politicians who have been in office for months or years and haven't said the right things up till this point. And so we're sort of encouraged to theorize and make up optimistically what they may or may not do by either campaigning or at least intellectually preparing ourselves to support or oppose politicians based on the mainstream narrative that we're being offered. And so what is really going on right now out there in Electionville? I mean, we've seen Stephen Harper start the whole shebang off a week ago today with the notions of a coalition of a coalition government that would be unstable and ineffective, and despite the fact that it's made up of our elected representatives, despite the fact that countries worldwide, democracies worldwide, have had coalition governments. Stephen Harper started the ball rolling by saying there may be a coalition government out there that threatens the safety and security and tranquility and economic viability of the country of Canada if voters don't choose to extend his current and supposedly successful reign as prime minister. And then you had the opposition parties out there who said, well, you know, we're not actually planning on forming a coalition. And so that's set up, whether it was by accident or on purpose, that set up the partisan nature of our elections process, where basically our favored politicians say, things, and our disfavored politicians, the ones that we're opposing, say certain things. And depending on which side of the fence we're on, we choose to believe, you know, whichever politician we're more closely politically aligned with, depending on whether or not we sympathize with the left or the right. And then flowing from that, both sides can lie to their followers, and both sides can lie to the entire country, and we feel more or less predisposed to support the liars who we choose. And so that's how the election campaign's going so far. If you're a conservative, then all of a sudden the conservatives can't lie, only the liberals can lie, and so you don't notice and make note of the conservative lies. And if you're on the left, it's vice versa. So, you know, let's take a look at a couple of radically divergent election points of view here, just to give you an idea of how the debate is shaping up. This is from the Vancouver Sun here, and this is by Peter McMartin from Post Media News from the 3rd of April, 2011. Temples throbbing, blame the election. And it starts off here, a half dozen reasons in no particular order why, after week one of the election campaign, I feel like I'm coming down with something. One, the not-so-merry mouth of May. And it says here, Elizabeth May has become the Kim Kardashian of the election campaign, in that every time I see her on TV, I think, what has she done to justify her being on TV? May's Green Party has not won a single seat, and she's not even won her own seat, yet the defining characteristic of her campaign, as it's been in past elections, is her insistence that she deserves to sit at the cool kids' table. Sorry, but no. May perfected the art of the pout, which, to her credit, she realized the only way she and her party will get any press. But tantrums grow old quick, as my bosses will tell you, and when threatening litigation is the only thing going for you, it's time to rethink your strategy. Another one, the Royal House of Strahl, talking about a Fraser Valley British Columbia MP. Number three, Libya Elation. And the article goes into the revolutions taking place in the Middle East. Number four, Michael Ignatieff is a weird egghead from some hoity-toity place like England or Harvard who thinks Canadians are dumb cheeseheads and who, in fact, may be a zombie who eats the brains of children, and he hates hockey, too. Must we? The adolescent attack ads, the constant dispiriting insult to our intelligence and national sense of decorum. When did Karl Rove immigrate to Canada, and why would these ads do the conservatives insist on validating the charge their critics make of them, that they're mean-spirited, ruthless jackholes? Workers of the world, take sick leave. And this is admiring Jack Layton for what he's doing, suffering from cancer and recent hip surgery, still campaigning on the trail. Number six, remind me again, why are we doing this? In Japan, the death toll approaches 20,000. Some 190,000 people have made homeless by the tsunami live in temporary shelters. Cities have disappeared. A full-scale nuclear meltdown may be occurring. And the government's reaction to disasters has been at times halting and obfuscatory. In other words, as mediocre as the Japanese political establishment itself. Yet the government still stands. No one has resigned. No one has been asked to resign. And so this is an article on our elections. I'm going to keep this in mind here. And the article ends here. All is calm. The economy hums along despite a lingering recession. Our biggest threat to our lives is cholesterol. This is literally what the Vancouver Sun is saying at this time in history. The biggest thing we have to worry about is cholesterol. Yet here we are enduring our fourth federal election in 7 years because of, hang on a moment while I Google this, a Liberal motion that found the Conservatives in contempt of Parliament for not supplying enough info on the cost of three of their bills. In other words, these children don't play well with others, and the fate of our nation, again, rests in the fact that someone wants to be class president. You have any Tylenol? I have this pounding headache. And so people could read this article in the Vancouver Sun and be inclined to think that we don't actually have any real issues to be concerned with at this time in history. And yet, I take us to an article from the Toronto Star by Angelo Parascelli, also from the 3rd of April, 2011. So we're having an election about a debate. And this article is much more revelatory when it comes to issues that should concern Canadians out there when it comes to the election. The first week of the federal election campaign is over, and it's no surprise that the most important debate is about the debate. This says a lot about a campaign that no one wanted, no one can win, and no one cares about. They not only don't know what to debate, they don't even know how to debate and who should be there. I read a few days ago that, quote, the Tories let election skirmishes eclipse war in Libya. But this election is about skirmishes. When Parliament was dissolved, Canadian CF-18s had already begun bombing Libya. A powerful earthquake had rocked Japan, and our economy was still in the recovery room. Global turmoil notwithstanding, it was decided that, quote, our democracy is under attack. That was because Minister Bev Odin naively tried to cover up the exercise of her ministerial prerogative. That's like someone stealing from her own house. And because of the government's, quote, contempt of Parliament by not revealing the price of new F-35 fighters for the next 30 years, we don't even know how much we've spent keeping the current CF-18s flying for the past 30. We've seen this movie many, many times in the last Parliament. And then Mr. Parascelli goes on to list a number of real issues that should be taking precedence in this debate. For example, back to the article, why is no one talking any longer about the horrible, quote, secret documents hidden by the government about the torture of Taliban prisoners in Afghanistan? The opposition parties implied that our government was led by a bloodthirsty third world dictator and our army was a bunch of heartless mercenaries. They asked the speaker to force the government to release the, quote, secret papers to dismantle the cover-up. They've had those papers for a long time now. So where's the smoking gun? This election, we're told, is about integrity. If that's true, why did Gilles Duceppe say his party's ready to vote with the government if Prime Minister Harper agreed to give $2 or $3 billion to Quebec as HST compensation? Is $3 billion the price of integrity for Duceppe? Why did Jack Layton say Harper could have avoided an election had the Prime Minister accepted his request to amend the budget? Was $4 billion Layton's price for integrity? And had Harper canceled the $6 billion corporate tax cut, would Michael Ignatieff have voted in favor of the government? What's the price of integrity in Ottawa? $2 billion, $4 billion, or $6 billion? I'm neither defending nor condemning the budget presented by Finance Minister Jim Flaherty. I'm only saying that if the opposition parties didn't like it, they should have voted against it and told Canadians what their alternative plan was, sparing us the lectures and integrity from people who put a price tag on it. If anything, by refusing to cave into their demands, Harper told them that his integrity was not for sale.
We are hearing about integrity in order to hide the shallowness of leaders who fight over a coalition that to all of them, including Harper, have flirted with at some point. Then we debate about a debate that lately has become no more than a stage for stand-up comedians. And here's where we get to the meat of the matter from Mr. Parascelli. If it's too much to debate international issues that have the potential to ravage our economy, then why don't we try some, quote, made-in-Canada issues that concern voters? For example, what do we know about the free trade agreement with Europe that, if signed, will affect countless Canadians far more than any coalition or fake issue of integrity? What about the impending new, quote, perimeter security and trade agreement between Canada and the United States? And at last, the mother of all issues, healthcare. What are Harper and Ignatieff planning to do when the current agreement on Medicare transfer payments from Ottawa to the provinces expires? Why don't they stop selling integrity by the pound and start talking about real issues that matter? From Angelo Parascelli, the political editor of Courrier Canadais, his column appears on Sundays in the Toronto Star. And that, ladies and gentlemen out there in CKLN, Rude Awakening, listener land, is the closest I have seen so far in my perusing of the mainstream election coverage by typing election or Canada election into Google and clicking news. That is the closest I've seen so far of anybody mentioning the real issues, like the free trade agreements that have been costing us jobs since the late 80s and that are now only expanding as Canada is ushered into this era of globalization and the international community, also known colloquially as the New World Order, run by the central banking mafia, who create currency and credit out of nothing, loan it to governments worldwide, and put them and everyone else under debt and under their control, either directly or indirectly. That's the first I've heard of these issues, and that's the first I've heard anybody mention the new cross-border security agreements, as reported by the Ottawa Citizen in 2008, that allow American troops to be used on Canadian soil in the event of a crisis, and that allow Canadian troops to be used on American soil, and that could be expanded further to the point where we will have international troops under the guise of the United Nations roaming the world and settling troubled spots and rebellions in certain countries against the system of globalization, because they are more likely to shoot and to arrest, round up, detain, torture, whatever, people from a city or country where they're not from. And the Chinese government did this back in 1989 during the Tiananmen Square massacre. They knew there was going to be a big uprising. They knew there was going to be huge protests. And they knew that they would have more trouble getting Chinese troops to shoot Chinese people. So they brought in Mongolian troops. And that was their plan. So you can see that we have real pressing issues at this time in history to deal with. And yet those issues are hardly being brought up in this election campaign. Now, because you folks out there are by and large Canadians listening live to this broadcast, among others worldwide, possibly on the online stream or shortwave radio, who the heck knows, I'd like to invite you to call in at 416-595-1655. That's 416-595-1655 if you have any questions or comments to make about your federal elections in this part of the world and what we should really be talking about. Things like Bill C-36, which restricts vitamins, herbs, and minerals, starts to make them available only by prescription and puts us all at the mercy of big pharmacide drugs as the only option when it comes to preserving and improving our health. And it also puts the world's food supply, at least several parallel agreements in countries worldwide, under control of the United Nations as part of Codex Alimentarius regulations. You can look up CodexAlimentarius.net for more on this. And you can see that since 1953, the UN and the Food and Agriculture Organization have been trying to slowly but surely, through piecemeal treaties, gain control over the world's food supplies. And this is part of their plans. And the reason that I focus so much on the elections at this time in history is because there's only certain times when we're really in the mood to talk about politics. And yet there is a bit of a catch-22 out there playing out. And the catch-22 is this. Once the process has started And once we're aware that people have invested a certain amount of faith in the process, then it's a lot harder for us to criticize it, because we feel bad about criticizing it. We feel bad about taking shots at a process and at political parties and at candidates that other people, other Canadians in particular, are supporting. And so it becomes a little bit difficult. Is it insulting if I call politicians liars and if I say, look, if they're not bringing up real issues that even we all know about, such as our participation in the war in Afghanistan, such as, you know, who owns our national debt, how do we get out of this, such as whether or not the Bank of Canada will keep interest rates low, such as why is gas now $1.29.5 at the gas stations, as I saw coming in this morning, when Canada has plenty of oil and gas, and we could, if we needed to, for the benefit of Canadians, offer gas to people in our own country cheaper. Why aren't these issues brought up? Why aren't the issues of international agreements that are robbing us of our sovereignty, of things like the free trade agreements, again, NAFTA in the sequel, the Security and Prosperity Partnership, that puts Canada, America, and Mexico under the dictatorship of trilateral working groups made up of corporate CEOs who basically tell politicians what policies to write to guarantee them more power, more profits, and more control at the expense of all of us and at the expense of our ability to even use our political system to gain more control of our countries and of our resources and secure our futures. Why aren't these things brought up on a more regular basis? Well, it's going to be up to us to do it, folks. We've got about 4 weeks left in this election campaign until May 2nd, and it's incumbent on Canadians out there who know what's going on to try and make a bit of a stink about it. And to take flashback to sort of a funny, political, goofy moment, I'm going to take you to an Onion parody of what happened right after Obama won the election back in January of 2009, or October of 2008. And it's kind of a funny look at what happens to people who are so heavily invested in a campaign that they're clueless as to what to do afterwards.
Kendley's roommate found him in an almost comatose state.
Up until yesterday, he was so annoying that I wanted to kill him. Now I just want my old, condescending, Obama-obsessed friend back.
Experts say some voters' fixation with the Obama campaign ran so deep, they've lost the ability to process non-Obama-related information. Across the country today, authorities are reporting throngs of Obama supporters wandering without direction or purpose in streets and parks.
We've been here all day. I try to reason with them. They just keep telling me to check out some new Obama video on some Obama blog or something.
Many seem unable to understand that the campaign has ended.
You don't want to regret not voting. You want to make sure your paperwork is in on time and that you're registered in the state that you want to vote in. You're not going to rest. We are not going to do anything until Barack Obama is the next president of the United States, and we are full steam ahead until Election Day.
Jane, it just looks devastating out there.
Yes.
Who will take care of these people?
We really don't know. Many have already driven away their friends and family with months of endless praise for Obama's latest speech and constant reminders to vote.
Well, that does sound annoying.
Clearly they have no friends, nothing to live for.
Right. What about Obama? Do you think he'll help these people?
No, absolutely not.
Really?
In fact, Obama has said that he finds his supporters, quote, so irritating I can't even deal with it.
Well, do you see an end to all of this, Jane?
Well, you know, Andrea, I think a lot of people just hope these people will die.
I think you're right.
But, you know, worst case scenario is that someone with evil intent seizes control of them.
Sure.
They've proven their minds can be taken over by empty rhetoric.
So if someone were to come up with a catchphrase as simple and vague as, yes, we can.
Oh, awful. They would have an entire army of extremely energetic, insufferably annoying, mindless pawns at their command.
Okay, well, we're going to be praying that that does not happen. Thank you, Jane.
Sure, thank you.
Later in the hour, we'll tell you how to spot and avoid an Obama supporter by looking for clues on their messenger bag. And in other election news, the nation is preparing for an onslaught of obnoxious kids named Barack.
And we're back, folks. And I thought I'd take that little clip just to show, just so that we all remember how easy it is for people to get caught up there and zombified by what's going on. People, and again, this election looks like a clear split between people that have decided to vest a lot of faith in any one of the candidates, be it Harper, Ignatieff, Layton, or possibly even Elizabeth May, and people who absolutely don't give a damn about this election one way or another, not realizing that retail politics, when politicians come to ask for your vote, including MPs, MPPs, or city councillors, it's the best time ever to bring up real issues and to ask them to do something on our behalf. And yet from the Montreal Gazette here, at montrealgazette.com, it says experts predict low voter turnout from Derek Abma at Post Media News from the 3rd of April 2011. It says more than 40% of eligible Canadian adults didn't bother voting in the last federal election, the lowest turnout since Confederation. And so far, there's no evidence the May 2nd vote will yield a better result. A recent poll found that 57% of Canadian adults are, quote, certain to vote, says Daryl Bricker, CEO of Public Affairs for Ipsos Reid, a polling firm. He says the proportion of people who respond this way tends to correspond closely to actual turnout. Why such low interest? Simple, quote, people show up for elections when they're really passionate about the result, he says, but the current campaign, quote, seems to be a Seinfeld election, an election about nothing. Quote, we might get a small bump, but I would expect the number to probably be as low as the numbers to probably be as low as they were last time, agrees Elizabeth Goodyear Grant, a professor of political studies at Queen's University. While there have been exceptions, the numbers show a general trend of progressively weakening voter turnout. The 2006 election that brought Stephen Harper's Conservatives to power did produce a bump turnout. Turnout rose to 64.7% from 60.9% in 2004. The Tories benefited from a surge of public anger towards the Liberals over the Quebec sponsorship scandal. Other bumps include the 70.9% of Canadian voters who cast ballots in 93 to give Liberal Jean Chrétien his first mandate. In 1984, when Brian Mulroney first came to power, 75.3% of eligible voters participated, and voter interest held at this level when Mulroney was re-elected in the, quote, free trade election of 1988. It's possible the regularity of federal elections in recent years, the May 2nd vote will mark the fourth in less than 7 years, has led to declining interest. And there you have it, folks. We have people that are largely turned off by what they've seen so far in this campaign, and there are a number of articles reflecting this. And there is a table here taking us back to 1979. In 1979, 75.7% of Canadians voted. Similar numbers were held in 1984 and 1988 as well. But in 2004, 6, and 8, 60.9, 64.7, and recently 58.8% of Canadians voted in the federal elections. Are we surprised? Should we be surprised? Should we be concerned about this at all? That's something that I'd like you to answer out there if you'd like. Number to call in is 416-595-1655 to share your questions or comments here on air. I do love taking calls. Sometimes I ask all show for people to call in and nobody calls in. Other times I don't even give out the number and I have no agenda to take calls, and there's three or four people who call in. So no idea what you folks are feeling like out there. But I do know this. There's a certain sort of casual antipathy towards people that question these things, be they activists, be they conspiracy theorists or whatever, and some of the actions they take. And this leaves us in a bit of a bind here. We're kind of hamstrung by our socialization when it comes to being able to take action on these issues. Because if we normally don't feel like talking about politics very much, if we don't feel like arguing it, because I remember a few years ago, people didn't mind talking about politics. It's, you know, when you suggested that we actually do something about it, that's when they more or less got a little bit, you know, antsy about things. But at this point, if we don't even like talking about politics, then it's much, much more difficult to get us in the mood to actually do something about them. Things like sharing information, putting up posters, handing out flyers, sharing website links, commenting on message boards, writing blogs, creating online polls, creating lists of issues that every prospective voter in your riding should bring up to their prospective MP candidates to make sure, you know, they're dealt with. These are things that are foreign to us, and the reason is that there's a social stigma attached to the actions of activists, conspiracy theorists, patriots, you know, people out there who quote unquote get involved in what's going on. And this apathy has been engineered, and it makes it much more difficult. We don't want to talk about these things much because most of us don't have much of an interest or much of a natural inclination to, or enough information to have a really good conversation. Then we should at least get in the mood to pass on info and create local cultures where we can get in the mood to talk about these things to the point where we can actually affect change out there. And so what's going on here? What's happening? What is the public mood with respect to this type of information and people who look into it? Well, for you folks out there, I know there's probably some construction workers and cops and other guys listening, as well as ladies, among other people who casually tune into the show on Mondays and Thursdays. I've got a clip here from the Joe Rogan podcast, which I spent a stupid amount of time chopping the swearing out of, because Joe Rogan, Eddie Bravo, also of MMA, mixed martial arts fame, and Brian Redman discuss Alex Jones and what they think of Alex Jones. And if you just follow this conversation, which I'll encourage you to do for the next 9 minutes, you can see the thought process where things get a little bit too heavy, and you know, they acknowledge he might be right, but then they think he might be wrong, but then they admit that might be wishful thinking, but then they think maybe it's not wishful thinking, but then they bring up, you know, real conspiracies or scary stuff about the government that they actually know, and then they quickly run away from that into a more lighthearted segue. And you can see the thought process that is reflective of much of the thought process in the media when it comes to discussing serious political issues reflected in this podcast clip. So from podcast episode 93 with Joe Rogan, MMA fighter Eddie and trainer Eddie Bravo, and Brian Redman, this is a bit on Alex Jones and real politics.
That's the only way a person can really rule. They have to rule as if there's something outside of the human race. They have to rule like a deity. They have to rule like they're a god. They have to rule like they're... You can't even come close to them. You got to get on your knees, sire. Thank you for hearing my words. You know, you have to get on your knees and not make eye contact with him. And then when he put his hand out, you would kiss it. What the... It's like they you had to have that trick to keep an empire together. They couldn't have access to information. It's like the ultimate example of how, like, those empires, like, the more access to information, the more you realize that the guy in charge is just fucking crazy, the less likely it is to be able to have something like that. That's why all these fucking empires are falling apart all over the world, man. That's what Egypt, why it's going on in Egypt with Mubarak, and why in Libya they're trying to get rid of Gaddafi. I mean, I'm sure there's a bunch of American black ops involved as well. There's a bunch of CIA that... You know, forcing these people out because they're probably sitting on a giant pool of oil.
You know, but what?
People are into it because information, because they're getting information.
I haven't listened to the Alex Jones version of what's going on in Libya. I'm sure there's a whole different version. I'm very interested in it. I just haven't had time, Alex.
I haven't heard it either. I can't. When this is really happening, when real shit is going down, that's the last time I want to listen to Alex, because he'll get you distracted. It's eugenics. What they're doing right now is they've got... FEMA has black plastic coffins outside of Dallas. I've seen them, ladies and gentlemen. I have the photographs, and there's 200 billion of them. They know there's not even 200 billion people. So we're talking clones now. Clones of people. Life extension. We'll be right back. Buy gold. You need to buy gold, ladies and gentlemen. 2012 solar impact gold will protect you.
I like that little "we will be right back."
Yeah, we'll be right back.
That was good.
So that's what he does. We'll be right back, folks.
That's slick.
He's got to run a show.
He's out of his mind.
Alex Jones rules.
He's awesome, but he's out of his mind. I think Alex Jones is dead on the money like 70% of the time. That's what scares it out of me. All the crazy stuff that he throws in there, I mean, maybe he's right. I don't know. Seems crazy to me. But the real stuff that he's dead on the money about, it's almost cheapened by all the other, the histrionics, the craziness.
He knew with the Japan thing, he knew about those explosions like days before they would announce them. They were not admitting he would get it like somehow on the
inside. Could have been a lucky call.
But Reactor 4 just blew up. It's like, damn, I got a 1 in 6 chance. Oh, 4 hit! 4 hit!
Ding, 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 ding. Yeah, that's funny.
Alex, you did it.
Well, he's a news junkie, and he has access to it that other people don't have.
I want to know why he's still alive. How come they haven't tried to kill him?
Why would they kill him, man? You don't have to kill him. For what? He's not stopping anything. No one's stopping anything. And you know what? The things that get exposed, they're supposed to get exposed. Yeah. He's like the Perez Hilton of the political world. That's what it is. It's like, you know, he's exposing it that, you know what? You fucked up anyway. You shouldn't have been doing it this way anyway, stupid. You know this is wrong. And everybody's in government. It's not like everybody's evil in government. But there's a lot of stupid, poor choices that get made, and the better they get exposed, the better it is for everybody, even the people that are governing the people. They need to be checked, too. It's not like everybody in government is evil. They have to be evil. They don't necessarily have to be evil. A lot of people go into government with good intentions, but along the way, they get stifled by corruption and bull. So this is all good for everybody. This is good for everybody when like this happens. But some of the stuff that he says is terrifying. Like, one thing that got passed by everybody that you never hear discussed was during the World Trade Organization meetings in Seattle. You remember those? Where the people were stopped from protesting. This is what happened. There was peaceful protests. It was a long time ago. I think it was like, I want to say 2001, but I'm just pulling that number out of my ass.
Yes.
I just pulled that out of my ass. I think it was actually before that. No, it was before that, because it was before 9/11. It was quite a bit before 9/11.
The protesters were actually CIA guys?
Yeah, well, the protesters were cops. They were paid anarchists. They were people that were sent in to go in and cause chaos and break windows and smash, and they all wore ski masks, and they all wore military-issue boots, and nobody knew them. They weren't involved and the rest of the protest. The protest was peaceful and inconvenient because all these foreign delegates and all these people were coming, you know, these representatives of foreign countries were coming to that one place, and to have all this protest around was embarrassing, and it was disturbing, and it was causing a lot of press. Like, they were having to answer a lot of questions about it. So they turned it into a violent display. They turned it into a violent protest. They being the government.
Yeah.
They came in with guys that were in military outfits, and they would wear ski masks on, and they broke windows and they smashed. And Alex Jones documents every single aspect of it, including these guys going into a safe house and being allowed to negotiate, and eventually all being released. I mean, he documents all of this, and you know, he does it with news reports, and he does it with video footage, and it's pretty fucking crazy, because what they did is they shut down a protest. They sent some fucking goons in, and they shut down a protest. And this isn't Nazi Germany. Yeah. This isn't the Roman Empire. This is the United States of America.
That's crazy.
It's fucking nuts, and it's 100%. It's not like this is a conspiracy theory. They stopped people from walking through with things that said WTO with a red line on it. How fucking un-American is that?
Anything's possible after that.
You're saying that you can't go in with a pin that says World Trade Organization, that you're opposed to it? You can't have an opinion? That's not even offensive. It's not. There's no swears, no curses. It's not something that would hurt children. You know, you just have a WTO with a red line through it, and you're telling me I can't go to work. They wouldn't let people into buildings. They had cops there with guns. They were telling people, you have to take that shirt off. You have to take that pin off. And they have videos of this. In America, they created a no-protest zone. So just for the stuff like that Alex exposes, you know, whether or not he's right about a missile hitting the Pentagon or any of that other stuff, I don't know, man. There's not enough time in the world to be dwelling on all this. but he's right about enough.
He's wrong about a couple things, but if you're going to judge a guy based on, like, oh, he was wrong about this, so he can't know anything else, you know, then none of us would have any opinions that mattered. He has fucked up a little bit here and there, but, man, I believe that he tells me, I believe I'm confident with in the 90 percentile. I'm confident. Yeah,
well, he's a fun guy, too. I enjoy his company.
He's a great guy.
Like, I love hanging out with that guy.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty surreal hanging out with Alex Jones, right?
Yeah, he's cool, man. We took him to Vegas. We took him to UFC. We're all hanging out, having a good time. You guys, I'm really happy you brought me out here. I mean, need to relax. You know, fight a new world order, man. It's crazy. You know, every now and then you get a little crazy. He's got to sit back with a cigarette.
I love it because he loves talking about all the. It's like he could go two ways. He could be a guy like, please don't talk about conspiracies like anymore.
Right, I'm tired. Let's talk about normal.
But no, not Alex Jones. He'll go.
Donald Rumsfeld was the one who. He's the one who got that pass through to Diet Coke. That's how it got in.
Yeah.
Okay.
I feel bad for him. Though. It feels like he needs to calm down.
He does, but he does
turn off.
He does, but he doesn't. He does, but that's him.
Yeah, let him.
You know, you let you be you. Let him be him. You imagine if they made the Brian Red Band conspiracy show, you'd be like, hey guys, I mean, who knows? I don't know. You know? Why are we freaking out about this? All right, we'll be right back after these words for the Fleshlights. That'd be the Brian Red Band conspiracy radio show. You'd be like, I think we're all getting a little carried away here. Okay, we don't know yet. I don't know what's happening in Japan, but guess what? That's way the over there. Forget it. God. Everybody relax.
That's you.
FEMA has 300,000 helicopters with beds in them ready to go. They can stay in the air for up to 3 days, okay? Solar-charged helicopters in case of an asteroidal impact. It's recommended that they... he'll just fill your brain up every day with more information about doom and the apocalypse. And
I love it. I love it. I have so many questions. He has answers to all my questions.
The craziest thing is he's always selling gold. I think that motherfucker just needs to step up and start selling gasoline and bullets. Stop fucking around with this gold. Because you know if shit goes down, gold's going to be useless. All right? Unless the Anunnaki land again and we got to give them gold to let them take us aboard the UFO. Unless that happens, gold's going to be useless.
I think gold is... like, it's universal no matter what. In Mad Max times, gold is still going to be...
Really? First.
Yeah, I think it is. No matter what, that's the one thing we all agree on in this planet. We don't agree on every country, even the same religion.
It all depends on whether or not by the time the apocalypse hits, we've created artificial people. If we created, like whores, artificial whores... you know, soulless, mindless robot whores that you could just
that's
and
the they end of love technology
you and
like
they're
that.
So happy and they just shut off and wait for you to come back.
Yeah.
And when you come back, they talk to you perfectly. They're like, it's just like Blade Runner, except they don't have a soul.
Why would they shut off? They should be cleaning your house.
Technology clean your house.
No, you got one of those too, bro. You got this crazy looking Tongan woman with face tattoos. She cleans your house.
Technology
She's a clean your house slash bodyguard.
But I wish you could can you fuck that house robot?
No, you're better off getting a dude house robot. With no like a eunuch. Eunuch, he's built like the Incredible Hulk, except downstairs it's like Ken.
I'm never gonna have a guy.
And his face
robot.
Is all fucked up. He has one eye, like one big cyclops. He's like there's no way girls.
No, he's got three eyes. He's got three eyes because he needs to be able to see everywhere so he can protect you.
And we're back, folks. Hope you like that quick slice of the Joe Rogan podcast. As they decide to get political, and they do occasionally, and Joe Rogan is a guy I admire. I think he's funny. I think he's interesting. He formerly hosted Fear Factor a few years ago. He's a stand-up comedian. He's a mixed martial arts commentator and world-renowned professional at his craft, which now includes podcasting at joerogan.net with guest Eddie Bravo and, of course, his assistant Brian Redband. But you can see the thought process there as they allude to the fact that there are serious issues, but then eventually steer it away to something lighter and fluffier, like we're supposed to do. And I was talking with a buddy of mine about this yesterday, about whether or not to bring up politics. You know, what could you actually talk about, especially when it's so depressing, you know, with respect to the amount of political control that we think we have. Well, they're putting on this huge dog and pony show for us, the elections here in Canada. It says here a letter to the Chronicle Journal of the Northwest. Elections are a luxury that we should respect. As a member of the Thunder Bay community my entire life, and as a journalism student at the University of Ottawa, it is clear from this letter that Douglas Kucelek simply does not understand what is going on at the federal level. He is correct to say that people do not enjoy elections, but we need elections to facilitate change. People can complain about how they don't like the people currently in power, how they don't care about us, how there's not enough federal funding here or there or somewhere. Well, this is the opportunity to change that. People are dying on the other side of the world for the chance at democracy. We are lucky that it is a right in Canada, not a privilege. You don't like how governments are running? Then cast your vote. You don't want it to change? Cast your vote. I think that's a luxury that we should respect. And this is from Michael Robinson in Ottawa. And what I'm noticing about the media is that they will publish a lot of letters from voters. There's letters from voters out there talking about the first past the post system, how it's fundamentally undemocratic and doesn't give us a chance to elect who we really want to elect, because we just have to choose the as opposed to having a runoff where it can get whittled from 4 to 3 to 2 candidates to one candidate, and then we could change our opinions based on whoever's left over. People have to resort to strategic voting to try and make sure that they can get the best possible election results as they prefer. And we're also getting bribed and threatened with our own money. The Liberals just released an $8 billion family-friendly budget proposal, which the Conservatives say is impossible to pay for and will really cost $10 billion. And then Ignatieff says, well, he's going to raise the corporate tax rates and get rid of the corporate tax cuts. And then the Conservatives, and corporations for that matter, start threatening us with the fact that they say it'll never work. It can't work, and it'll be bad for the economy. So basically, corporations are threatening us by saying, if you raise our minimum tax rate, or if you get rid of some of our corporate tax breaks, then we're going to screw you. And so we're kind of caught, you know, between a rock and a hard place here. Do we want a family-friendly budget that allows for more money for education, healthcare, and other traditional priorities of most Canadians? You know, and if we do that, well, what's going to happen to our economy? So it's a catch-22. Plus, you have the public-private partnerships that have sprung up all over the place. Essentially, when government sells off public infrastructure to private corporations to manage it, after taxpayers helped invest and build it, and some of these public infrastructures, when they're well run, are some of the only profitable sectors of the government. Things like the LCBO, Liquor Control Board of Ontario, that regulates alcohol sales and that has stores that sell alcohol to thirsty Canadians who love alcohol, because we do, and heck, I do. It's fun. It's just it causes some issues, and it always has, but it is fun. But there were thoughts of selling that off to private corporations, even though it was actually a revenue stream for the government. And there's talks about this all the time as we move into this new global form of communism or fascism, where governments will no longer regulate the actions of corporations to protect the people, but will in fact merge with corporations to rule over people through various means and mechanisms. And so this is part and parcel of what we're facing here, folks, in the 21st century. It says here, unpaid jobs, the new normal, courtesy of Alan Watt at cuttingthroughthematrix.com. And this is from CNN Money. While businesses are generally wary of the risks of using unpaid labor, companies that have used free workers say it can pay off when done right, by Catherine Reynolds, a contributor here. With nearly 14 million unemployed workers in America, many have gotten so desperate that they're willing to work for free. While some businesses are wary of the legal risks and supervision such arrangements might require, companies that have used free workers say it can pay off when done right. And you're going to see more and more articles normalizing this, as we've seen over the last couple of years, as the recession that's never supposed to end gets worse and worse. So do keep an eye out for that. There's a very, very simple economic plan at tarpley.net, tarpley.net, a 5-point plan to end the depression. Number one involves going after Wall Street or Bay Street or London or any other, wherever you are, any other series of stock market and financial Ponzi schemes. You can have a regulatory tax on those of, say, 1% on all transactions, and there's millions of transactions a day, a lot of them, you know, with fairly high dollar figures attached. Simply taxing those at a very, very low rate can give us the revenue streams we need to pay off debts, to fund social programs, and to help get us out of this global economic depression, or at least get individual countries out wherever they try this. And you'll see places like Iceland, which really got jacked bad by British banks, with the bailout and recession scenarios over the last couple of years. You can see the people of Iceland working with their politicians, working with their MPs and other legislators to battle back against the banks, and yet very little news of that here in Canada. The assumption simply is that, well, as long as they're doing well, then we're doing well because they're the ones who control the economy. And yet slowly but surely, they are reaping bigger and bigger rewards from the recession while the rest of us are paying for it more and more. So got to put some of these issues on the table. Another thing is choosing to fund infrastructure projects to help create jobs, choosing to fund mass transit, choosing to fund road repairs and infrastructure projects, traditional means of getting out of depressions and economic recessions that have worked for the better part of the 20th century in countries where they've been tried. We can certainly push for these. And make sure that that cuts to social programs are not based on threats of no funding or to the budget, because, again, It's part of a trick to convince us we're broke so that we accept them. And so we definitely have to be wary of those. Because even though we're not being threatened with austerity measures right now as part of this current election campaign, except for possibly a little bit by the conservatives, they are certainly in the cards wherever we are. And our resource-based economy will protect us for a short time. But if we are this apathetic about our political system when it reaches out to us for our vote, and when the media can put out bland articles about the personalities or about how voter turnout's expected to be low and we're pretty apathetic about this, or about how the debates, who should be in them or not, or when you have articles that say the $8 billion budget is a good thing and certainly and feasible, and then you have articles that say, no, it's not, it's impossible to pay for, it will make the economy worse, and it's totally speculative and subjective and based on subjective thinking, then you have to ask, what exactly is going on here that we can figure out for each other to transcend this and to push past this? The federal election stirs debate among leaders here, and this is from the Vancouver Sun. Happily woke up to a new CTV Nanos research poll indicating Canadians want a majority government. They're tired of indulging Jack Layton's fantasies of triggering an election, gaining another few seats, and becoming the puppet master of Canadian governments. Now, if Stephen Harper and Michael Ignatieff can convince the media to arrange a one-on-one debate between the two men, Canadians can make an informed decision on if we want to go through the red liberal door or blue conservative door. In all probability, the winner of a one-on-one debate would also be the man who forms the government of Canada. And so, again, more debates about the debate as opposed to about the issues. In some countries in the world, they bring up the issues first, and they vote on the top 10, you know, or so issues. Like in Switzerland, they vote on the top 10 or so issues that they're concerned about, and then after those issues are settled on, then they vote for candidates and the best candidates who can get them something, who can get them those issues that they're already concerned about. Here we kind of do it backwards. We kind of start to get more or less into certain candidates based on what we're offered, and so we really, really have to analyze the system critically and get a bit more active with respect to speaking about it in ways that are not proscribed by the mass media. And on and on and on, folks. There's a ton of more stuff going on now as well. Lindsey Graham advocates killing the First Amendment from Infowars.com here, basically going after the internet and freedom of speech. And so this is happening worldwide, and it's also happening here in Canada, but it's happening in many ways psychologically, and that's one of the key things that we have to get around here. While we can speak freely, while there isn't overt pressure on us to shut up and back down, we've got to encourage more of that to get to some real issues and make sure that they're brought up. This is the second last election before 2012. The next one here in Ontario for our provincial members of parliament and premier of Ontario is happening on October 6th. So we've had within the last year municipal elections here in Toronto, and now a federal election across Canada, and coming up in October, a provincial election. What if we started planning for these things well in advance and bringing up issues of corruption and rare mainstream news stories that reveal it, and saying, look, we're going to make sure that these things are discussed the next time politicians come by and ask for our votes? And with respect to this current election, what about taking some strong stands out there on some of these issues and exposing the fact that they're all lying if they're not talking about what's been going on for the last 5 years under Stephen Harper, with him centralizing power unaccountably? And one of the reasons they are is that their job, whoever gets elected, be it Ignatieff or Layton, will be to take that increasingly centralized power and use it to further consolidate power on behalf of the big bankers and corporations who are trying to steal control of our countries. Because it's the same thing Obama did under Bush. Bush did all this bad stuff to centralize power in the office of the president. What happened with Obama? He came along and used it and is in the process of further centralizing it for the next leader, because these are, in fact, the times we live in. So a ton of more stuff going on with the elections, folks, but I just want to invite you that a lot of the commentary out there is playing the blame game for who triggered this election, for who's ticking who off. Is Layton ticking off the West by pushing for a coalition? Is Duceppe ticking off everybody by pushing for more money for Quebec? Is Ignatieff's budget feasible Will the conservative government's budget be more trustworthy because they've been in power? It's all going to be based on speculation. It won't be based on the cold, hard facts as we know them. What about security certificates like Mohammed Harkat's at Mohammed, HARKAT.com that are still in effect? What about G20 martial law and who is really responsible for it? How come none of our MP candidates has promised yet to investigate that? Is that something that we can put them on? What about the wars in Afghanistan? What about 9/11 truth? What about genetically modified foods? What about climate change, now exposed 4 years later with snow in Toronto in April and cold temperatures worldwide since the UN announced global warming in March of 2007? And tons of science to expose on that as well. Will the Green Party bring up fluoride and get the federal government to stop pushing fluoride on communities who try and resist using it? When in fact, officially on their website, they recently came out a few months ago against the use of fluoride based on the scientific evidence showing that it is in fact bad for us. These are things that we can push for legitimately in this country because they're things we already know if we can get the word out. And so there you have it, folks. A bit of an election run around, just giving you an idea of the confusion and the chaos out there. Help people cut through that with bigger and better issues. And as MPs come a knocking, why don't you give them a call? Give their offices a call. Why don't you get some official statements on some of these issues and then bring those statements back to people? So you can say, this isn't just my opinion, bring it up out of the blue. I actually tried to get a comment on this issue from somebody who's running, which I thought would help enlighten us as to who to vote for. Tons and tons of things you can do by bouncing off the system, getting some data with your truth sonar, and then bringing back results to the people around you. And so hopefully folks out there get active in the InfoWars, share some DVDs, flyers, posters, website links, make a blog, comment on message boards and articles, go to CBC's Vote Compass and toss in your 2 cents, take the online survey, get active this process, and make sure you talk about things with other people that are directly tied into the process so they feel more inclined to listen. Before the People's DJ, David James takes you on a 4-hour jazz experience you will not forget as a local jazz legend here in the T-Dot. I'm just going to shout out a couple of websites where you can find a bit more information on these issues. One of them is Infowars.com for the big picture. Got to keep an eye on that. There is a global plan out there, so crazy things happening in other countries, especially Western democracies like the UK and America are things we've got to pay special attention to, and many of those things are in fact also happening here. Plus things to keep an eye on, the fact that Al-Qaeda are now the good guys because they happen to work with the rebels in Libya, and there's a ton of terrorists that come out of that part, and the CIA's there is helping them out. So first we had apparently there were protests in the streets that were being strafed by the Libyan Air Force with no actual photographic proof or evidence, you know, shared with us. And then it turned into these crazy ragtag rebels have the latest in anti-aircraft guns and tanks, and they're supported by the CIA and Western intelligence and armies publicly, as well as the NATO UN-led aerial bombardment campaign. What is actually going on over there? Go to TARPLEY.net to find out more, as well as Infowars.com. Alan Watts, CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com, a great place for a philosophical overview of what's going on out there. And also... NAUResistance.org, NAUResistance.org for issues with respect to the North American Union. This is a better time than any to bring them up to prospective MP candidates. So try and send them a little pack of info. Get some information back from them, some answers on how they feel with 4 weeks left to go in the election, and then try and share those with people out there. HenryMAKOW.com for excellent info on culture and relationships. It's important out there for men and women to stop scrapping. For people in general to stop scrapping with each other, for the wolves out there to hear me howl these crazy things like 50% of us are supposed to get cancer as part of this eugenics program and as certified by cancer.ca, the Canadian Cancer Society, and others. And there are things like this, bigger issues that get us out of our own heads that can unify us with whom we live with and with others where we live in our communities, that can get us more active on trying to stop the big plans of the people at the top. So Henry MAKOW. KLNW.com. Great place to check into more on that. FluorideAlert.org for the dangers and risks of fluoride. Let's get more info out there, but we should be able to get it out before 2012 at least. VRAN.org for legal vaccine exemption forms. Out there, SeedsOfDeception.com for info on genetically modified foods. NaturalNews.com for great health information in general. Nobody can dispute you passing on that website, so do pass on NaturalNews.com. Locally, TorontoTrueSeekers.com, great place to network on these issues. Saturday Street Actions at Dundas Square here in Toronto, sharing info with their fellow Canadians. PressFORTruth.ca, the video of us postering and flyering is up. Go to PressFORTruth.ca for more. And the new screening of Into the Fire about the G20 summit, protests, and martial law in June 2010 here in Toronto premieres on April 22nd at the Bloor Cinema at 7 p.m. Go to PressFORTruth.ca or ConspiracyCulture.com, the Conspiracy Culture book and DVD store at Queen and Roncesvalles. For more information, you can also check out Victor Fletcher's Toronto Street Newspaper out there on the streets of Toronto, sold by the homeless. YouTube.com/The Secret Store for Derek Soberall's excellent work, sharing information about Canadian political issues, including rare mainstream news that if more people saw, could help us influence the outcome of these elections and our political system in general. So tons and tons of things you can do out there, folks. What can I say? Get active in the info war while people are interested in talking about politics. If they're not interested, try and find ways to make it interesting, make it relevant, and share some information that can help them improve their health, their wealth, their relationships, the lives of them and their children, and their future. It seems like the right thing to do at this time in history. My website is whatyouwanttobelieveein.com. My blog is blackkrishna.blogspot.ca. Got a couple of articles up there about the election, including being really mad last Monday. Sorry about that. I just kind of felt really mad about this whole election process hitting us in the face like this, and want to express myself. But hey, just some honest thoughts from a guy who's trying to be honest, especially about our most important issues. Hopefully you enjoyed them for this Monday, April 4th, 2011. We will see you folks on Thursday. Have a great day, everybody, and peace out.
The trial is denial, the child is on trial, the sundial is set. The shadow casts long until the shadow is gone. No shadow this song. Yeah. It's 2008.